Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Telerik. Create compelling app experiences across any screen with the Telerik platform. Telerik's end-to-end platform uniquely combines industry-leading UI tools with cloud services to simplify the entire app development cycle. Telerik offers everything .NET developers need to build quality apps faster. Try it free at telerik.com/platform. That's telerik.com/platform.
From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 419. In this episode of Hansel Minutia, Scott talks with Richard Campbell.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm talking with Richard Campbell, which makes this Hansel Minutia 14-ish?
13, 14.
We lost count at some point. I think we may have recorded 11 twice.
We've done a bunch of these.
Yeah, and I
get people ask me regularly when we're going to do the next one.
That's interesting. So your claim to fame is no longer, a decade on .NET Rocks and thousands of shows and
no.
Tablet show. And it's the
I've been able to talk to you a dozen times, and that's yes. The only thing that matters to anyone.
Exactly. That is your the occasional guest spot on this show.
Yeah, for not being a guest, what would I be? Well, thank you so much for saving my career. I really appreciate it.
Oh yeah, I know. And you were destitute before this guest spot.
How jet lagged are you?
It's funny. I'm really not jet lagged. And my wife will not believe me. I am not jet lagged. I got back from New Zealand yesterday.
Oh, man.
And, but I tried to explain, as I've explained to everyone who has insisted. It's always wonderful when you're fully fine and people are like, no, you're jet lagged.
You're messed
like,
up.
No, I'm really inside my own head. I'm here.
Yep.
Just did an inventory and I'm fine. New Zealand is 20 hours ahead.
Right.
But that's great because it flips over the international dateline. So what I do is I ignore the dateline part. I don't look. I take my watch that I have that has no date. I ignore the day completely and I just decide that it's 4 hours behind.
Right.
Which makes it like going to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no jet lag at all. I am fresh and footloose, fancy free.
Feeling good. How was the show?
Codemania is a really lovely conference. So if anyone is ever in or around Auckland, New Zealand, I would encourage them to check it out. It was large. It was well organized. Everyone was cool. They had Leah Varu from the W3C was there, and she did an amazing job.
She's a great speaker. I'm always blown away by her.
She has an amazing talk called Mr. Border Radius. And the entire talk is about this little character who's like a little cartoon man made entirely with a, border radiuses. And it sounds like, how could you do a talk like that? But we had her at Angle Brackets and she did an hour on just that one tag and the power of this one CSS tag. And I wanted to watch another hour after that.
Wow. That's awesome.
It was amazing. So definitely awesome. And we also saw Troy Hunt. He's the guy who wrote the website called World's Greatest Azure Demo. Basically, it's a 1 hour demo of everything you can do in Azure. So he's doing my job for me.
He knows, web security really well too. We've had him on .NET Rocks a couple of times.
Yeah. Definitely two people who know their stuff backwards and forwards.
Yeah, so, without a doubt.
It was cool. And then I was at Build also.
For like a day, you just tore in and tore out. I was there for the duration.
Yeah, I wanted to be there, but the issue was that I had been invited to Codemania a year ago,
mm-hmm.
and before Build had been scheduled, and I really, I don't want to cancel if I tell someone I'm going to be where I'm going to be.
Yeah, no, that's a character thing right there. And how far in advance did you know about Build? Because the outside world, I mean, there's almost no notice. It just appears.
I think I ended up learning about it in like February or early March. I mean, it was pretty early.
But that's not early. That's really late. You know, to book Moscone, that's the sort of thing you do a year in advance.
Well, yeah, I'm sure that someone knew, but I didn't figure it out. I didn't figure out that I had double booked a conference until January at the earliest. But I have to go and check my emails. But I guess the oh crap moment happened in January somewhere. But the folks at Codemania were very accommodating and they moved my workshop So I was able to participate, and me and Scott Hunter did our talk, and it went okay.
Yeah, the lesser-known Scott, who's someone I think the world of, and near as I can tell, anybody who actually works with him finds it feels the same way too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mr. Hunter is a good man.
Hunter is one of the lesser Scots. you haven't heard that? That's like they call us that now.
The lesser Scott. Well, because the big Scott's really big these days.
Yeah.
Executive VP. Holy.
Yeah, he has like a Prius waiting for him outside of meetings so that he can get to the next meeting in time.
Nice.
Yeah,
right.
They call it a 888. It's a executive VPs at that level literally have, they don't have to wait for a shuttle. They have their people manage their time. So they have like a little electric car that's sitting out front waiting for them to drive from.
Nice.
Think that's the perk you get.
There you go.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
For being responsible for almost everything development does at Microsoft.
Yeah, you'd think you'd get a bodyguard and, I don't know, someone to hold your laptop, but no, you get a Prius.
I love it.
Still, it's cool, though. A lot of stuff came out of Build.
A lot of great news. I liked the keynotes, and I think it created a great tone. It's like the first time we see Satya as CEO is at Build. I just was so thrilled about that. I could have done without quite as long a laundry list. Even though the laundry list was all good news, It was long.
Yeah, he has got a poise about him that I must say I like a lot.
Yeah, he's energetic without being over the top, And he's really engaging. Like, you felt good listening to him.
Yep. I think that if there was any question that he was the right person for the job, I think that got pretty much confirmed that he's a good egg at this conference. He's just very poised.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I like him.
I'd just like to see, I would hope next year he does a more traditional keynote where just give us an inspirational view of where the company is going and then let us get to the sessions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. His keynote made sense and it set the tone. And setting the tone is, I think, the primary job of a CEO.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We're starting some interesting announcements. There's lots and lots of open source stuff going on.
Yep.
You saw that WinJS is open sourced and running cross-platform, which I think is confusing to a lot of people.
Yeah, because WinJS is supposed to be Win.
Yeah, well, maybe it doesn't mean Windows. Maybe it means winning. I don't know.
But, you know, what amused me was they did the WinJS announcement first, and then the next day they did the Roslyn announcement. I was sitting at a table with some folks just listening in, and the guy said, well, when I saw the WinJS announcement, I thought, oh, good. Microsoft's done with WinJS, so they're open sourcing it to get rid of it.
No, right? it's much bigger than that.
Yeah, and I know that's not accurate.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a true statement at all. That's not the way Microsoft does stuff in the open source community. But then when Roslyn gets open sourced, and C-sharp's not going away. So now I don't think I understand open source.
Yeah, so people at Microsoft, and this is just me speaking for what I have seen, okay?
Right.
But we are very careful to not want to throw something over the fence.
Right.
So open sourcing as a way of dumping something, They're always talking about that. They're always saying, we can't do that. Like,
yeah.
Anytime someone's like, I've been trying to open source a thing called Log Parser. It's an IIS log parsing
Yeah,
system.
No, I use it all the time. Great tool.
So I've been trying to open source that for like a year.
Wow.
And yeah, I mean, because it would be an obviously cool thing to open source. The problem is every time I bring it up, and I brought it up last week, in fact, a number of folks said, well, but who is going to maintain that? Like, who is going to shepherd that? And I was like, oh, you know, does it really matter? And they're like, yeah, it really matters. We don't want it to look like we're just trying to dump this. So they won't open source something unless they know that it's going to live, you know, beyond, a year or two after it gets out there. So it's not a licensing problem,
right? Because often I could see internal, there's lots of cool things that Microsoft's built internally that they didn't let other people download.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever you talk to them about why is this open source, they're like, legal. We just can't get through to free the whole thing up.
No, but it's not about that. It's not about that. Yeah, legal is fine. Like, legal is totally, like, if we can come up with a good reason,
right?
Then they're like, oh yeah, cool, rock on. But if there's two things that we need a sponsor internally,
right,
and a sponsor externally.
Yeah. And I think you need to, somebody needs to commit to being the leader of that project as an open source project thereafter.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But it's, you're having a child essentially.
Yeah. We almost had someone who was willing to take it. The other thing though is that people have these historical applications that they love, like in this case, log parser, but then they, you look at the code and really no one should be proud of it. You know, like,
it's often something that was cobbled together and then more people used it and cobbled some more and cobbled some more. Like it's not a thought through app. It was a needed thing. I got lots of software I built like that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, DOSBlog. I mean, Clemens and I always joke about that, but DOSBlog is very much like that as well. It's a great application. People keep asking me what blog system I use. I tell them and they're like, oh, good, I'll use that one. I'm like, you really don't want to use that. You know, like, is it dead? I'm like, it's not dead. It's just done.
Yeah.
You know, it's finished. It works great. I will continue to use it. One day I'll upgrade to WordPress if I want my blog hacked on a regular basis.
Nice.
And, you know, but no, you don't want to use DOSBlog. It's fine and it's rock solid, but don't have any expectations. You know, it's like buying a used car.
Yeah. You know? It is what it is.
It is exactly, you know, people should treat more open source like the fact that it's a used car. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, is this a new car or used car? Am I going to get warranty support?
Yeah.
There should be we should do that. There should be like an implied warranty. And then at the same time, when people pick open source, I tweeted about this a couple months ago, how funny it was that I saw a corporation, decided not to use an open source project. And when pressed on why they would not use it, they said, well, the college student that maintains it is not interested, in working on it anymore. You know what I mean? So like, okay, you know, I don't know, whatever, Bank America, whoever it was.
Large American corporation.
You don't want to use...
an intern controls your company.
Right. Well, not even an intern. Like some very, very well-meaning 12-year-old Norwegian high school student is apparently no longer interested in taking pull requests.
Nice.
Therefore, you will no longer be picking that. That doesn't make any sense, right?
No, it's like, crazy. The other way to play this is like what Redgate did with Glimpse, where they're like, hey, why don't we just take care of the guys who invented this project, make sure that they can continue to work on it. Still is an open source project, no chain of ownership at all, but they want to roll, you know, why wouldn't the corporation do that? Hey, it doesn't cost much to take care of that person, to keep that project going open source and being valuable for people.
Yeah.
And it's actually a move of goodwill at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think that having a corporate sponsor is a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
I think it's a mature thing. You know, we're inching towards actually being a charity in Humanitarian Toolbox now. I got more IRS paperwork coming in. And one of the parts of this is this idea that we could end up with charitable contributions in the form of corporations taking on specific applications that are used by disaster relief workers.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's getting there. It's a long, making a charity is hard. And it was not what I planned on doing. You know, this was just, I thought it would be fun to developers like building software that makes a difference. And here was a little infrastructure we could build that could make a difference for people. But then the right way to do things turned out to actually filing an awful lot of legal paperwork and spending hours and hours with lawyers and the IRS to really take it as far as it can go.
That paperwork, it's amazing how much paperwork there is. I think that if we wanted to make small business and charities work better, we would have less paperwork to make. I'm trying to do a small startup right now with a friend, and we have spent more time with the LLC, the code signing certificate, and the bank's paperwork than we have on the actual thing.
Right. Now, and I also appreciate that people exploit the charitable model to do inappropriate things. And clearly, I got nothing bad to say about the IRS guys. Like they are looking for the right things. Mm-hmm. You know, are you actually trying to do good here? Or are you trying to wash money here? You know, like that's what they're looking for. It's pretty clear what
they're
trying to do.
Can't I do both though?
Yeah. Well,
can I also wash my money here?
Apparently no. It's against the rules.
That's a bummer.
So yeah. So I'm willing to, if this actually is the thing I've got to do to make a difference in the world, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that bad.
Did you, another thing that came out of Build was the new update to Windows, which is the poorly named, as if we had expected anything less, Windows 8.1 update.
Yeah.
Did you get
why
that?
Yes, I installed the 6 knowledge base files in the correct order on my laptop.
Well, to be clear, that'll all just happen automatically on Windows Windows update. So one day you'll wake up and it'll just be better.
Yeah. But right now, for us geeks, if you want it today, which you can get, and it's not like it's a terribly hard hoop to hop through. You just have to install one, reboot, install it, X one, reboot until you're done.
I actually did the whole thing and did not reboot once. I just, whenever it says reboot, you just say later, and I did the whole thing all in one fell swoop.
And then rebooted once?
Yep, and it worked just fine. I did it on five machines.
All right. So it's just the, and it's six files have to be done in the right order.
Again, this is with MSDN people only.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, and I actually, interesting insight, of the six files, I didn't have to do two of them.
You already had them.
Which means that they're starting to just, you know, prep your machine, you know, by trickling out the little, because it's, you know, this little tiny fix prepares the system for that little tiny fix. So I think that it's kind of rolling out now, and we'll see it in the next couple of months.
I agree. I had one already on my laptop, so. Yeah, same sort of thing. And but it absolutely worked. It's a nicer version of Windows. No two ways about it.
Yeah,
only we could actually give it a name.
I didn't think I was going to like it. Like I saw the screenshots, and I was like, "What kind of weird hybrid, you know, freaky thing is this going to be?" And like right now, I'm on my big monitor here, and I've got my desktop apps and my store apps running that are running sitting in the taskbar.
Right.
So this has actually got me using the Mail app more because I can see it now. You know what I mean? Like I spend most of my time on the desktop.
Yeah, me too. And so invariably I live in Outlook.
Mm-hmm.
But I spent a lot of time making sure the Mail app didn't annoy me. Mm-hmm. No more pop-ups and stuff. But I can see actually getting there.
Yeah. For desktop users, I think it's definitely an improvement. I don't know. It's kind of weird though that you see the apps that are quote unquote running in the background. Because they're not really, you know what I mean? So it gives the impression that these apps need to be shut down.
Right.
And it's funny, I was sitting next to someone on a plane and I watched them just before, it was so funny, just before they said, okay, we're going to take off, turn your phones off. And they basically like in this kind of ritualistic way, went into their iPhone, then, you know, went into the little task manager recently used list and then just one by one shut down each of the little apps, realizing that they're not shutting anything down, right? They're just kind of clearing their most recently used cache. And then they shut the phone down.
It's like if you just shut the phone down, all that happens.
But it's also just not necessary, you know? So it just seemed a little bit odd to care about that kind of stuff.
Nice.
But the point is, though, that even as elegant as the iOS operating system is, they still have that sense that this is how computers work and they are things running in the background that you have to stop.
Or something bad's going to happen.
Yeah.
It speaks to a level of distrust still, right?
Exactly. And that's a great point. It's not distrust of Mac or Windows or whatever. It's distrust of computers.
Right.
They are doing something in the background, and we don't trust them.
Right.
So
we're explicitly going to tell them to go away, even though we didn't actually tell them that. But it makes us feel like that.
Right. Exactly. what I do when I was overseas is I just go into background app refresh, and you can do this on Windows as well, and then just say don't. If you turn on background app refresh, turn off background app refresh on an iPhone, then all that background stuff just stops.
Nice.
Batteries last longer. It's just that apps don't get updated. Works just fine.
You actually have to wait when you flip to one of those other apps for it to get the latest set of data.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Which for me is invariably Tripit.
Oh, is that the app that you... Oh, yeah. That is the thing that you want the most updated information from.
All the time.
Yeah.
And that's... You know, it's one of those cases where the Windows phone does a really great job because the live tile has the one thing you need to know about your current travel on the tile.
Yeah. They announced... Was it Windows Phone 8.1 is coming like any minute?
Yep. Any minute, next month or so.
Yeah. I'm still carrying around my Lumia 1520, and I'm thinking I might give it another try again.
The 1520, the plate?
Yeah, it's like a giant, phone, right? It's like a phablet.
Right. I call it a BAP. I call it a big-ass phone. I don't like phablet.
You don't like big-ass phone?
Big-ass phone, BAP.
I'm afraid BAP means other things, depending on who you hang out with. But, okay.
All right.
Yeah, so,
so the conversation I had at Build about the 1520 was, what's douchier, holding that giant phone up to the side of your face or using a Bluetooth headset?
Ooh, I'm going to have to go with Bluetooth.
It's close. It's very close. The only thing I would say, the 1520 lights up the whole side of your head when you put it up there. So
yeah.
It's quite the thing.
Well, yeah, it is. It does look very weird. And I will say that I feel... I feel conspicuous when I'm talking on a phone that big.
That's because you are conspicuous on a phone that big.
It's a little bit of a problem, but I'm still gonna try it because if I can get kind of the Siri experience with Cortana, then I think that they may have caught up. You know what I mean? Like now they have reached parity, and then now the real fight happens.
Yeah, now things get interesting.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I think is going to happen.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I think it's an interesting time. And the app log is close enough. Like they both app stores are disasters. So I think there are parity there. You can't find anything. Doesn't matter whether there's a million apps or 250,000 apps. You still can't find anything.
Yeah. I don't know why people keep saying though that Windows doesn't have the apps. The apps they're there. You know what I mean? It's another example of a myth that keeps getting stuck. I mean, they've got, I don't know, 8 out of 10 of the apps that I want.
Something like that. They're missing Uber right now. They keep promising that Uber will show up.
Uber? But you can use a website, can't you?
Yeah, but you missed the main, what do you like? The thing that's good about Uber is knowing the car is coming and exactly where it is so you can walk out as the car pulls up. And that's what you don't get with the website.
Oh, I see. Well, but again, Uber is a thing that depends on where you live. If you live in a big town that has Uber, Uber, of course, is a taxi replacement for those many, many, many people who are listening who do not have Uber.
Yes.
Once you've experienced Uber,
you know, it's profound.
Yeah, if it's wonderful. I mean, if you want to go somewhere and you live in a major city, you just say Uber. But if you're, you know, overseas in a smallish town, then Uber doesn't mean anything to you.
Right. Yeah. But it's not even your own town that you care about. It's when you're traveling.
You know? I have a $40 Uber credit I've been sitting on, and I only use Uber when I'm like in Chicago or some major place where I need it.
Yeah. Well, and that's exactly, you know, the vehicle's going to be clean. You know, it's going to show up when it shows up. There's no transactional friction. Uber's addictive. It's really enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
It sets the bar for me on how everything I want to do going forward, interacting with a customer looks like.
Yeah.
What really low friction transactions look like.
Yeah.
Hey, not to jump around too much, do you want to talk a little LED lighting? Because you and I were arguing about this, I don't know, a month ago.
I went and I got some LED lighting. It's called Prismatic. Let me see. Prismatic. Prismatik. It was a Kickstarter, and it's basically 4 LED strips that run around the back of the monitor.
Neat.
And there's a little app that you run, and it takes about 2% CPU, and I think they're always working on lowering it. Depends on how much how big your monitor is. Now I have a 30-inch monitor, so it's like, you know, 2048 by something big. So it's looking at the pixels on the screen in real time. Mm-hmm. And then determining the color. So right now I'm looking at a picture of a field with blue sky on top and green at the bottom. So then I've got a green glow out the bottom of the monitor and a blue at the top. And literally as you move if I took a paintbrush and made a red square, if I moved it up to the top, then the ambient light would turn red. The Philips Ambilight TV was the first thing that did this. So these are basically open source and do-it-yourself examples of ambient light. And it really works.
Yeah. What does it actually add to the equation? I mean, I like the effect. I'm looking at some of the videos and things around it. But, you know, how does that change things?
Well, so they say that it works on eye, you know, helps with eye strain.
Right.
I don't know about that. But it does give a sense of the... what's the word? Not a halo, but there's an aura around it, right? There's a larger glow around the outside of it, implying that it's somehow bigger than it is. If you've seen those videos of the possible versions of the future Xbox, where, you know, the screen is outside the screen.
Yeah.
You know, it does give you that feeling a little bit, like there's something beyond the inside of your monitor.
Yeah, so it's a sense of a larger surface. It just keeps on going.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, the only time, let me see right now, it's using 2% CPU right now.
Right.
Which sounds like a lot, and people are like, that's unacceptable. You know, but I mean,
most of the time our CPUs are laying around smoking cigarettes and playing poker anyway, right? We are not bound by our CPUs. We are bound by our bandwidth.
Yeah, well, I've started to get a little bit more of a cynical attitude about my CPU. Like, if it's not working, then what do I have it for? You know what I mean?
Right. And apparently I have 4 of them. So clearly some of them are goofing off. Give them something to do.
Well, I've got 12 logical CPUs, 6 physical. So I'm willing to give, you know, a tiny percentage of one of those CPUs just because I like the effect. And for a dark office like mine, it really, really adds a lot.
That's nice.
Yeah, yeah, I like it. And then I run that Flux. Do you use this Flux?
No.
You don't know about this?
What is this?
Oh, wow. Okay, so Flux, I don't know if it's Flux or Flux. It's F.LUX. Lux, like for like light, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can get it at justgetflux.com. And basically, it's free software that changes the color of the computer's display to adapt to the time of the day. So it warms it at night and it makes it like sunlight during the day. So if you ever try to get the color, the color temperature correct, it knows where you are. It looks at the, you know, it figures out your lat long, and location, or you can tell it. And then it will rise and set with the sun.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have a bright blue color, you know, but when I mean blue, I mean the whites are blue.
Right.
During the day, and then a more warmer kind of sunset color at night.
Yeah, orangey yellow.
Yeah, and it's lovely because at night you want that. It's less bright on your eyes. If you're doing
for a long time on my Win 7 machine, my background was a map of the world with the day night line correct and the clouds accurate.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm always calling all over the planet. So just being at a glance to say, hey, I'm calling Amsterdam. Oh, it's dark there. It's night there, you know. And in fact, being able to see the clouds over, too, he goes, it's probably raining there, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I love, what was that app called? It used to run in the background. It covered up your desktop.
It was the whole back. Yeah, and it doesn't work on Win8, so I've had to give it up. But, I can't even remember the name of it now. And it makes me sad. My favorite thing.
It was a dynamic earth wallpaper.
It was like a dynamic earth wallpaper. And my favorite thing was every so often the satellites capture a photo of something re-entering. Mm-hmm. So you get this white streak across the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And you could say, you know, I'd walk up, the screen would come up and you're like, hey, something re-entered today.
Well, here there's an application here called EarthView. From DeskSoft, and it looks like it will work on Windows 8. They just added Windows 8 support, and it will change. It will update the. So it may not be dynamic, but it's at least going to update. And they've got a free download here, so I'm going to check that out. EarthView.
Yep. This sure seems like the same one. Yeah, and maybe they've now added Win 8 support.
Looks like they've got day view, night view, clouds, cities. So it's, you know, it's dynamic-ish, and they'll update it every X minutes.
Nice.
So that might work. And they've also got, looks like multiple monitor support. So that's at desksoft.com. I'm actually installing it right now.
I love that you just go for it.
Well, I mean, it seems like a good idea, right?
Yeah.
So why not, right? Here we go. Start EarthView and go. Okay. And it's going to go and it's running in the background. Seasonal, extracting and preparing image data. Look at this. Rescaling clouds. So this thing is actually rendering this locally and then looking at weather data, generating cloud map. And then, oh, wow. Look at that. Yeah, this is lovely. Okay, this wins.
Sold.
Sold, yes. Yeah, it's got this is nice because it's got the lights underneath, you know, where the cities are.
Sure.
Yeah, I like that.
I like that.
Oh, wow. There's other high detailed maps you can download. Yeah. All right. This wins. See, I love that stuff.
I love, yeah, me too. I mean, I like the idea that down in my basement is a machine that's connecting me to the world in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. It should be.
It ups my perception of what's going on in the world.
You know, it is. It's important to remember how big it is. Like we were talking about why we can't find this airplane.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't know anything about, you know, airplanes or aviation. You know, I just know that the more that I travel, the more that I realize that it is a big freaking world.
It's a very, very big planet.
Yes, and no, the chances are, the reason that we cannot find this thing is that the ocean is bigger than anyone yeah. realizes that it is.
Yeah. Yeah, we completely forget. And arguably, aircraft make that worse. You know, you in a day did a journey that 100 years ago was months, and 200 years ago was years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. People don't realize, like, we have more. Someone said that the average middle-class person has more power now than, like, you know, Henry VIII.
Sure.
You know what I mean? If you think about, like, the things that were... You know, like, you know, bring me some food, you know, like stuff like that, or, you know,
yeah.
eat, you can eat pretty much anything you want, whenever you want, you just go get it.
Yeah. And it's, and it represents a tiny fraction of your income.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not
exactly.
a big deal.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It is astonishing how far we've come in so little time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. And I'm, and I feel for the people who are still missing loved ones, but I'm pretty sure that we're not going to find that airplane.
Do you think that it is just landed in the ocean and just sunk?
Yeah, I'd probably broken up. The chances that it actually land its pieces in the bottom of the Indian Ocean.
Yeah.
The analysis that came out of Inmarsat of how they looked at the raw telemetry from those engines, mm-hmm. so they were able to use the Doppler shift to figure out almost exactly its course and the partial record that originally they didn't see until they looked at the raw data.
Mm-hmm.
Which means it was actually trying to negotiate a ping when it went offline. Makes it pretty clear about where it went down. It just took time to figure all of that out.
So you think that they're just going to have to go look for it?
Yes, but you know the reality is the it's been a month. The pingers aren't going to be working much. They're probably not working now if they're working. You know,
yeah, they imply that they got a ping and they may have like a day or two of ping left.
Yeah. Well, the Chinese said they picked up a ping.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so nobody else has been able to reproduce it yet, but we'll see. That is a very bleak part of the ocean. It is not an easy environment to operate in. So chances are pretty remote.
Someone said that it's about the size of all of the United States. So, you know, imagine the United States completely, you know, flat and empty and say, we've lost a plane. It's somewhere in this general area.
Right. And it's not flat and empty. It is windy and massive waves and very violent. And the thing you dropped is moving.
Right. Exactly. And by the way, we're not talking about a flat two-dimensional plane. Let's go ahead and make it 200 meters deep.
Yeah. Well, it's 3,000 meters deep. It's worse.
Oh, it is 3,000. Like, that's pretty deep.
There's very deep ocean there.
Is it?
Very, very deep and largely unexplored. There's nothing down there. That's why they keep giant squids down there.
Oh, is that where the giant squids are?
Yeah.
So aliens are there.
That's right. It's very deep oceans. That's also that's the big fault lines for the massive earthquakes. Like it's not a good place.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. Oh, kind of a downer to end on.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Golly, I'm just like.
Yeah.
Oh well.
But you know what I do appreciate is that many countries have come together with the best submarines in the world are down there right now to try and actually find it. If there's any chance at all, this is not a half-hearted move. The British sent down one of the Thresher classes. There's three different side scanning systems that mm-hmm. this is the kind of skill set that found the Titanic and the Bismarck, and it's like it's not going to be a good story, but at least we might get some closure.
Yeah, that's a good point. The fact that no one's talked about how much it's going to cost or who's paying for it, it's getting done. That is a heartening aspect of things.
Yeah, the Australian Navy, the U.S. Navy, the Indian Navy, like there's a tremendous number of ships and aircraft and huge numbers of people. And to try and get an answer.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for minutiaing with me again, Richard. I appreciate it.
Always my pleasure, my friend. We'll do this again, I'm sure.
All right. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.